session number 25574, real 1.
This is the first reel of a taped interview with Fred Arblaster in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 25th of the 6th, 2003, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Fred, can we begin the interview by you telling us your full name and where and when you were born, please?
Yes. My full name is Frederick Alexander Arblaster, and I was born in Williamstown, Victoria, which is a suburb of Melbourne, on the 29th of January, so I'm told, 1922.
Tell us about growing up there in Williamstown.
Well, I didn't grow up there because my father worked for the Victorian Railways his whole working life after the First World War, and I was moved at a very early age to a place called Kilsyth in Victoria, which is about 20 miles from Melbourne, and that's where I grew up, initially where I grew up.
Tell us about that. What do you recall of growing up around Melbourne?
Well, of course, it was very countryside in those days. We weren't very far from the Dandenong Ranges. About growing up.
What are your strongest childhood memories, do you think?
Oh, I suppose the open space, the freedom. There were orchards around it. In fact, my father had a small orchard, and the land opposite where we lived had recently been subdivided, but there was no building on it or anything like that at that stage, and we could just roam around there quite freely. And I went to school at Croydon, which was about a mile and a half walk each way, uphill and down dale, but we managed to survive.
What sorts of things did you learn at school that you can recall that stick out?
What did I learn at school? Well, I suppose I learned to read and write. That was the main thing.
I'm interested to ask people that question because history, in relation to what you were taught in relation to Australian and British history.
Oh, that's a good question. We were taught a lot of British history. A lot in those days, and Australian history.
I'm interested to find out how you saw yourself growing up in Australia in relation to Britain.
Oh, I suppose I was brought up to look upon England as home, and I don't mean that literally, but for people in those days would say, I'm going home, and what they meant was, I'm going back to England, and we were very much a part of, it was the British Empire, of course, oh yes, and we had Empire Day, the 24th of May, from memory. And each morning, I don't do it now at schools, I believe, but we saluted the Australian flag, which, as you well know, has the Union Jack in the corner. So, yes, we were very much part of Empire. And that was drummed into us, too. And we were taught, I've forgotten a lot of it, but taught a lot of English history.
What are your recollections of the situation in between the wars, particularly your knowledge of the First World War as a young bloke?
Well, I knew quite a lot about the First World War because my father was very, very badly wounded in France, and my uncle, who was a captain, was wounded at Gallipoli, and then subsequently recovered sufficiently to go onto the Western Front in France and Belgium, where he was seriously wounded, taken prisoner, and died a prisoner of war of the Germans. And I knew all that. In fact, I have his diaries here.
Did they talk much about their experience, their wartime experience?
No. Nor do I. The only people who talk much about it won the war single-handed, if you know what I mean.
I'm interested why you don't talk about your wartime experiences.
It's a very good thing to forget it. And even if I go to the RSL club, or if I meet my interpreter mates, which I do on a regular basis, we don't talk much about it. We just have a bond of mateship, I suppose.
Well, we can talk about how that has developed, that bond, and the importance of that bond. In relation to your recollections or your knowledge of the First World War, how was it seen?
In what respect?
How was the First World War? People talk of the war to end all wars, but how was it really seen by people like your father and your uncle?
I can't very well say, because I'm not inside what their mind was, but I believe it just had to be done. Same in the Second World War. It just had to be done, and we did it. And I believe that would be the same, that would be their attitude and the reason that they went. Oh, my uncle was actually at the Royal Military College at Duntroon, so he probably had no option, but my father volunteered, of course.
What were the thoughts of the stories of Gallipoli? How did people look at the Gallipoli campaign?
How did they look at it? Well, I suppose it was a glorious disaster, would be the best way to explain it. But the gallantry of our troops, the Australians there, under quite remarkable conditions, is still remembered quite vividly on Anzac Day. And I wouldn't, unless there was some pressing emergency, I wouldn't miss an Anzac service even today. And that, again, was drummed into us, because Anzac Day was a very, very special day. There were no pubs open, there were no shops open. It was a very closed holiday in those days.
Why do you think it was such an important occasion?
Why was it such an important occasion? It wasn't the first time that Australians had been to war. They'd been to the Boer War and so on, about which I know precious little, but I think it was the first time there'd been a mass movement of Australian men to an overseas conflict. And of course it was written up in the press in those days in quite glowing terms about the bravery of these troops, and they were, no doubt about that.
In relation to Gallipoli, I mean, you talk of this disaster. How do you think how do you think that affected the way people looked at Britain?
I would believe that the respect in which Britain was held transcended any problems with there were mistakes made there. There's no doubt about that, John. And there were quite a number of British officers in charge, and well, the whole thing was a mistake. But there you are. They landed in the wrong spot, just for starters.
Given the fact that the First World War was a war being fought on the other side of the globe, why was it important for the Australians to go off, do you think? Why did you think that your uncle and your father felt that they should go?
To support Britain. Elementary. That's my... I believe the same thing applied to my father-in-law. He also was very seriously wounded in the First World War. But it was the thing to do. God, King and Empire. Elementary.
Was that, to what degree did that belief hold true for you when the Second World War came about?
Well, it was a different situation altogether, because my involvement has been here in the Southwest Pacific, and that's on our doorstep. That we were defending Australia from the Japanese, and I think there would have been an entirely different outlook amongst the soldiers of the two different wars.
But you possibly joined up after the war had begun, but in relation to the coming of the Second World War, do you think that was one of the driving forces for sending, well, for chaps going off to fight?
Do you mean to the Middle East?
Their belief in King and God and country, empire?
No, I don't think so. A lot of them were unemployed because we'd just come out of a depression. I knew that they'd get three meals a day and they'd be fed and clothed, and it was a bit of an adventure, and I believe that motivated quite a few of them. Well, I know it did.
Let's talk about the Depression then. What do you recall of the Depression? You would have been...
1932. I'd be 10 or 11 or something.
Yeah, you would have been 8 when it started. In America at least, 1929. What do you recall of the Great Depression and its effects on you and your family?
Well, I had 6 brothers. There were 7 boys. But fortunately for us, I've mentioned my father worked for the Victorian Railways, and he had a job throughout the whole of the Depression, albeit not necessarily full time, because the words being used were, "I'm booked off next such and such a day," or so and so. They obviously were using minimum staff on the railways, but he still had money coming in, and there was food on the table, even if he did chop the heads off a chook or two. Or he had a cow which he milked and so on. And he grew all our vegetables too.
What do you recall of the Depression and the way that it affected other people, other families, the rest of the community?
Well, the way it affected other families was there was no dole as such in those days that I recall. Later on there was work for the dole, but initially there was no income, and I can still see these men with a swag on their back camping out, and they'd come knock on the back door and say, "Can I chop some wood, missus, for a sandwich or a cup of tea?" That's how bad things were. and I can clearly remember them camping in the sports ground pavilions. There was at least a veranda there and a shelter, and that's where they'd camp. And some of them used to buy coils of wire and make wire hanging baskets and all sorts of things out of wire, which they'd sell for a pittance. But actually, I can remember seeing them all over Victoria, just roaming, we used to call it the Long Acre, roads, looking for somewhere to sleep and somewhere to find a feed. And hopefully some money which they could send home to their family, because they were destitute. Most of the, a lot of the kids in those days just went to school barefooted, because they had no shoes, no boots. Yes, it was a bad time.
As you grew up and as the Depression eased, were you interested in the way the Depression had affected other parts of the world?
I don't think so. I was only young. I couldn't see very far out of the circle at that stage, I've got to be quite honest.
When did you leave school?
I suppose when I was about 15, 60, I don't know. What would have that made?
What were your dreams in relation to career, do you think, on leaving school?
Well, I had no dream at all. It was just to find a job. It didn't really matter. I had no preference, just a job. And I must say my father was able to get me a job, which in those days was quite a decent job, with a firm of electrical merchants. And I slipped into that and stayed with them until I went off to the Second World War.
Well, I'm interested in talking about sort of going off to the Second World War. You had a job. I'm interested in your interest or your knowledge about Europe and the changing political situation there. Did you have any recollection of that situation at all?
Well, I can remember, what was his name?
Chamberlain?
Yeah, Chamberlain. I can remember him waving pieces of paper and going over to Germany and that sort of thing. Churchill.
Had you had any prior knowledge of Chamberlain and, well, obviously Hitler, prior to Chamberlain going away?
Oh, yes. Hitler made front page news on the papers.
How was he seen?
Well, I think he was seen as a mixed blessing or a curse. My recollection is that he did get Germany really going economically. In fact, if he'd left it at that instead of marching into Poland and so on, he would have probably been a hero now in Germany instead of what he is, rather vilified.
Well, I'm interested in you talking that way, because as people would see, he gave a lot to the German people who had been very downtrodden during the Depression.
Exactly.
I'm interested when it was that people started to see Hitler as possibly not such a welcome.
When he marched into Czechoslovakia and marched through Belgium and did all the terrible things in what's the country?
Well, Czechoslovakia was 38.
Yep.
The Sudetenland, looking for extra land. Belgium would come a bit later on his way to Dunkirk, presumably. I'm interested, obviously, at that point, the sort of sense of appeasement that Chamberlain was allowing all of this to go on. Other countries were allowing this to happen. When Chamberlain came back from Munich in September of 1938, waving that piece of what paper, What were the general thoughts here in Australia toward that?
I find it fairly hard to answer, but my father was disgusted with it.
What do you recall him saying about it? Why do you say that he was disgusted?
He just said, oh, he's playing into the hands of Hitler. Or words to that effect. I can't recall his exact words.
What then if the idea that another war was on its way? When did that strike home?
I was only young, of course, but I believed it was inevitable.
When were you convinced that it was inevitable, do you think?
About 38, I suppose. At that stage, I'd joined the militia. I mentioned that to you on the phone.
Well, let's talk about that. I'm interested that there is, people talk of the Hitler Youth, people talk of scouts and all of that sort of thing. What of the militia? Can you tell us a little bit about the militia? Your involvement.
Yes, I can tell you about that. It all came about because I was working with this electrical firm, and there was a fellow called Reg Elvish, and he was either a lieutenant or a captain in the it was the 4th Division AASC of the militia, and he recruited not only myself but quite a few of the fit and able young fellas at this particular firm, and so we went along and joined the 4th Division ASC. Actually, it was really, in a way, good fun, because we had weekend bivouacs away, and we'd have camps for a week and so on, and we met at a drill hall in South Melbourne, and we had, I forget whether it was weekly drills, and we had a uniform, and they were brightly coloured and gold stripes on them and so on. So,
what did it feel like to be in uniform?
Well, in those days, people looked up to anybody in the uniform. So it was quite a good feeling. And my father having been in uniform, so, and my uncle, whom I repeat was long dead, but I was just doing the right thing by them, I felt.
Interesting, this sort of feeling of doing the right thing. Would you at that time have been prepared to go off to fight, do you think, if a war had come along in 1938?
Well, the simple answer is I had no option, because I had signed on to the militia, and that's what happened in the end. In about 1941, I imagine it was. I was not involved in the Middle East at all, but in 1941 I was just called up, and we went into camp. And
How did that make you feel?
How did that make me feel?
At the time, yeah. How did you feel about just being called up?
Just did it. It was a job that had to be done. We did it. We were, initially, we were camped at a place called Mornington Racecourse. This is probably isn't of much interest, but the ASC is a unit, the Army Service Corps, and we provide all food, ammunition, transport, we serviced other units. And amongst other things, we carted all the material to build what became Balcom Military Camp, apart from supplying petrol and supplying food and all the other necessities to the troops of the 4th Division militia.
Let's talk about the coming of the war. Obviously, there's the announcement made of the 3rd of September, 1939. What do you recall of that?
Well, I can recall I'd been to an evening church service, and I was walking up the hill going home. We were living in a place called Mount Albert at the time. And I thought, it must have come over the radio, I think.
9:15 p.m. Menzies broadcast that Australia is at war.
Okay. Well, I must have heard that, and I can just... My thoughts were, well, Fred, that's changed everything. Things will never be the same for you again. And that was... I went home and went to bed. There was nothing else to do. Thought about it, I suppose.
How did you sense that the community accepted or didn't accept, reacted to that situation?
Which one are we talking about? What date was this?
The beginning of the Second World War, when Menzies declared the war. How do you think the community responded to that? What was your general feeling of the atmosphere in the end?
I find it a bit hard to answer. The fellows that I was in the militia with, we just shrugged their shoulders and got on with the job.
What about friends and family? How did your parents accept? How did your people accept the coming of the Second World War, do you think?
Well, my mother wasn't very happy because she had, at least at that stage, well, I would have been 17 or 18. So I was certainly of age, and my next brother would have been of age. And she was concerned, and my grandmother was alive too. And she was very concerned about her boys going off to the war. In fact, she was very old, but she said, I'm going to be here when those boys come home. And goodness me, she was too. I think she died at the age of about 92 or 93, but she was determined to be alive when the boys came home.
What about your... What were you to receive any advice from chaps that have been in the First World War and on the situation for you now?
No.
What did your father say in relation to joining up?
Well, it was a fait accompli, and he didn't discourage it at all. I think that's the best I could say. But what they did say during the Second World War, they'd say, you fellas get it easy, you get it easy, you don't know what war's like. And I must say that I have never fought in trenches as such, like they did, and there were fellas mowed down. There were waves of men just going over the top and being mowed down with machine guns in the First World War. So I would have to agree with them that this was an entirely different situation. The war I was in, I believe, was entirely different to the situation they were in. That was just massacre. Just got to look at the number of graves and the crosses in Belgium and France and see that.
In relation to the situation, in relation to your country needing you, did you experience any propaganda that helped you along your way, do you think?
No. It just went. It had to be done. And I was in the militia. I'd signed on. It was as elementary as that.
In relation to being asked to fight for King and the country, what was the thought that you might not come back? You might die for King and Country. Was that something you were prepared for?
Yes, it was inevitable that Yes, could have happened to me easily from time to time. But I managed to survive. You've got to be a fatalist, I'm afraid. My father-in-law used to say, when your number comes up, that's it, Fred. And he's right. And if the bullet has your name on it, that's it. There's nothing much you can do about it.